and these being the beeps. And my computer comes back to life. You will observe that that beep sounds familiar, like the beep that comes through my beeper. That's actually a recording of the beeper that you would get in your earphone if you were wearing my beeper. And so I'm thinking what I should do is deliver a beep to you all and ask you to pay attention to what's going on in your experience right at the moment. And then we'll interview you about that slice of experience, that moment of experience. And furthermore, I would like to do that at a variety of different kinds of times throughout this week or the first half of this week. So as it catches you doing whatever it is that you might be doing. And I have talked to some people about beeping them during their talks, and Steve has agreed to do it this morning, and I think maybe what we'll do is we'll try that, we'll see how it works, and at the end of that time we might decide whether we want to do more of that or less of that or something, but that'll be good.
But you're just beeping me, though. Will you be beeping all of us?
No. That's correct. I won't be beeping during your talk. In fact, probably won't be beeping you, because that would seem a little bit overloaded. But,
I'll be right here.
So the rules of that engagement will be, if assuming that we decide to do it, which we, of course, might as a group decide, I don't want to do this, and that'd be all right for me. But if we decide to do it, first off, we would have to decide as a group to do it, and then I would encourage each of us as individuals to do it. So what I'm interested in is your inner experience, and your inner experience is absolutely your private property, and if you don't want to tell anybody about your inner experience, you should have the right to say, this is mine, and it's not yours, and I'm going to tell you about it, and that's totally all right with me. And so you should have, as do all the subjects always in my research, have the right to say, I don't want to talk about this inner experience, or this particular inner experience, or I don't want to participate in your experiment at all. Either way is okay with me. But if you do agree to talk about your inner experience, then I would like us to have some kind of a contract to say, well, I'll talk fully about this particular moment of my experience, and I'll answer honestly and forthrightly and as best I can whatever questions Pearl Burt or anybody else asks about my inner experience. So basically by signing on to saying, we can talk about this moment, we'll try to talk about it fully. But if you don't want to talk about it, if there's some piece of this experience that you don't want to talk about for whatever reason, then you should say, I don't want to talk about this. So the object there is we might learn something more or less interesting about individual moments of experience. And those moments are likely to be private events, different from what goes on the exterior, because that's what's interesting. Most of us have things that are going on inside which we don't make public all the time, and that is what makes people interesting, it seems to me, and that's what I would like to have is the right to talk about. If we were to do this, we would have to recognize that the moments that we're going to get are a very small sample. That is, there are 14 or whatever us, and if we millions of moments of experience that go out a day, we might pick six or something over the course of a week to actually examine, or some small number of moments. And that certainly would not, we should not take any moment as being typical of you or atypical of you or whatever, just a random dart thrown into the pot of experience, so to speak, and we get whatever we happen to hit in that way.
Is it the experience that you're having right before the beep, during the beep, or right after you've received the instruction? That?
Well, I've given the instructions.
No, the beep.
So the moment that I'm interested in is actually 1 microsecond before the beep begins. So I'm not interested in your reaction to the beep. That would be after the beep. I'm not interested in what you were thinking about while the beep is going on. I'm really interested in 1 microsecond just before the beep occurred. Now, I've recognized that in the physical world, it's not going to be exactly 1 microsecond before because there's processing time and all that. But what I would like to catch is your experience in flight, so to speak. Whatever was going on before the beep disturbs it. So I refer to that as the last undisturbed moment before the beep.
Is there any particular reason how long the beep is? I mean, it seems quite a long beep, actually. Because if it was shorter, shouldn't you be able to remember better what just happened previously? Or is it the experiment with the length of the beep? Or?
Well, the historical reason for that is that when I invented the beeper back in 1973, there were no computers hardly at that time, certainly no portable computers. So I had to figure out a way to make the beep, and a random beep. And the way that I have patented to do that is takes into account how long it takes you to respond to the beep. So the beep goes on until you push a button to stop the beep, and what you do is you amplify the variability of that time into a random number. That's what the first of these beepers did. But it turns out that in the real world of beeping, it's a good idea to let the beep go, have the beep go until somebody turns it off, because then they have to respond to it. They got to do something right then, or pretty close to right then. And that's probably easier. In here, the beep is going to go. If you think it's too long, well, then I should have made the beep shorter. But I don't think much about it.
Are we to expect this beep?
No.
Are we to ignore it? Are we actually, in order to fulfill this supposedly simple, but I think not at all simple, assignment, is still to be focused all the time on our inner experience in order to be able to react on the command when the beeper comes?
Well, I don't think so. Well, at least not unusually so. I think actually you're focused on your experience all the time, whether you're paying attention to it or not. And when the beep comes, it will catch you focused on whatever part of your experience you are having. So I'm presuming when Steve is talking this afternoon that you'll be interested in what he's talking about most of the time, and you will be paying attention to him and forgetting that maybe there's going to be a beep come 5 minutes from now or 45 minutes from now or something like that. But in some of those, I don't expect Steve to be that interesting, that you will have your attention on him totally throughout that period of time, and that your mind will wander through the byways of whatever it is that you're interested in, and your body and whatever else it is that in you that wanders, and takes your experience along with it, and then back to Steve, and then back to whatever you were interested in, and then back to Steve, because I think that's the way people are. And the object of the beep is to catch wherever it is that you happen to be. If you're paying attention to Steve, fine, then that's what we would be talking about. If you happen to be paying attention to the car that you were thinking about buying last week, well, then that's what you'd be thinking about. And if you happen to be thinking about what's for dinner, then that's what would be. But maybe we will find out that would be easy for you to access. Or maybe it's difficult. Maybe it's not possible for you to access that. That's sort of what the experiment is about. That answer your question?
Yeah.
So I for sure don't want you to try to pay attention to what's going on with you because you think you're going to get beeped. As a matter of fact, the reason that I would like to distribute the beep over the long haul is to make that very difficult for you to do that. In the real world of beeping, people put on the beeper, so a guy might wear it for 3 hours at a time and wear it for 6 days or 8 days or something like that. Very rarely do I actually get beeps that are about the beeper, about the situation. Maybe on the first day I'll get a beep or two like that, but most times it's just not that interesting. To, you know, you just can't wonder what am I going to be thinking about? What am I going to be thinking about? What am I going to be thinking about? You just can't wonder. Most people can't wonder that for very long. They could do that for a few minutes, but then there's other things in the world which are more interesting than that, and it's more interesting.
Can I just?
Withdraw from this?
No, please. No, on the contrary. This is really just a kind of, I'm being slightly cheeky here because this relates to what I'm going to be talking about, but it's part of an ongoing discussion. I think, I hope it's fair. If you want to dock this and talk about it later.
If you're asking for my preference, I would prefer you to be as cheeky as possible.
Okay, well then I'll just ask the question that I wanted to ask and you can respond or not respond. And the question is paying attention to Steve, in your view, having an inner experience?
Paying attention.
So when
this was the example.
We'll talk a bit more about that later.
So the term, so this goes back to a discussion that you and I have had about the definition of inner. Yeah. So I by inner, I do not mean to say it has to be focused on your body or your mind or whatever. So if I'm listening to what you have to say and that's all that's going on with me, that's what is before the footlights of my consciousness, then that is what I call inner experience. And you would say, well, that's a pretty bad way of talking about it. You should call that inner slash exterior experience. And I'm saying fine, but that just gets to be awkward. So I call it inner experience. But sometimes I call it experience, and sometimes I call it consciousness, and sometimes I call it phenomenal consciousness, and sometimes I call it whatever it is that happens at the moment of the beep.
So it could be inner experience as a convenient label for your experimental protocol for communicating with people who are doing the beep experiment.
Correct.
Or it could be inner experience as an accurate way of describing, if you like, getting through to the phenomenology of what's happening for.
Which is really what I would like to do. I would like to get through to the phenomenon.
Mm. Well, those two things may.
And maybe the best way to answer this question really is to turn the beeper on and let us get some beeps, and then we'll be talking about beeps, and then we can say, well, does that count as experience or not? And we can hash that out.
Yeah, the way I understood it, inner, I think when people use inner in this situation, it's not meant to be a literal spatial notion, but for me it's metaphorical to talk about something about access and what kind of access you have. So the reason why it's inner experience is that it's not the kind of facts about me that other people have easy access to. They can infer it. They can look at me, look on my face and say, oh, he's in pain or he's bored or whatever. So they can get, but they don't know it the same way that I do. I know I'm in pain and I know I'm bored or whatever in a more direct way. So the inner experience is the aspects of your experience that you have some kind of, philosophically privileged, but you have some privileged access to. Other people can see other aspects of my experience right now. They can see I'm in a room. They can see that I'm in a chair. They can tell those kinds of things about my experience, but those wouldn't be the inner aspects. The inner aspects of the experience are the, like Steve was saying, the phenomenology, the things that I have some privileged access to, and others only have, they have access to, but not in the same way, not in the same direct way.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
So sometimes I call it lived experience. But I don't think there's any good word, so I use a lot. I don't just call it experience, because that term is way too broad. So you could talk about the retinaling experience or something, which, like, we have this shared retinaling experience. Well, that's not what I mean, because your retinaling experience is going to be different from my retinaling experience. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, my experience at this particular moment, while I happen to be at retinaling, is, you know, the retinaling experience is some diffuse.
But in the context, that really doesn't
usually happen. Yeah.
So I think experience seems funny because the context rules out that usage of it. But I must say, I like lived experience.
I like lived experience too, but lived experience, says that term has been corrupted in some ways as well. And so there is no uncorrupted term.
Yeah.
What's the corruption you have in mind when you say lived experience?
Living the retinaling experience.
There is a group of investigators who investigate what they call lived experience, which they impose, from my standpoint, an externalized structure on. And I just think that isn't the way lived, what I think of as lived experience or inner experience or whatever it is, and so I don't like to be in that camp. I want to be wherever your experience happens to be going. So I'm happy with the term lived experience, as long as you don't put the baggage on it that the people who actually write about lived experience do.
Who's that? I'm just curious.
I'd have to get into a different frame of mind to answer that
question. Okay.
But I think the inner experience is also corrupted.
Absolutely.
Because it's almost presupposes dualism. There is inner and outer.
No argument.
And in fact, it's the experience of what's going on here.
I totally agree with that. Every term is corrupted. And therefore, I try to alternate back and forth so as to corrupt everybody. Or uncorrupt somebody or something. To average out all the corruptions.
Same thing with subjective.
Well, subjective experience is another term that I would object to. Is that the same?
Yeah.
But I call what I do subjective sometimes too. And for for the same.
Yeah, I was interested that you hadn't used that word yet.
I hate subjective more than I hate the other. But I do think that this we can short circuit this conversation if we can get some beeps and we can look at the beeps and decide whether this is inner experience, outer experience, subjective experience, lived experience, whatever.
Michelle, did you want to
say something? It's a much more, like, I guess, pragmatic or practical question about the way you're setting this up. I mean, because you're asking for the last undisturbed moment, but the experience that I might have been having, this could be just purely hypothetical, but imagine my experience is, for the last 5 minutes, I've been captivated by, let's say, you know, by the pattern on the rock. So, I mean, it could be that my experience has been extended. I mean, so when you beat me, it seems to me what I remember is that for the last, minute, I've been looking at this thing, and then, so that could be the whole experience, or it could just be, I was, the last thing I noticed was that little spot on it, that it was the last thing of that sort of bigger experience that had captured my attention at that precise moment. So I guess I'm asking what you would like us to report on.
Most people actually don't. That question makes more sense in the abstract than it does in response to the beep.
Okay.
Because if you're interested in the little bit of the rug, then there's no question about it. That's what you were interested in right then.
Mm-hmm.
If you were interested in the redness of the rug, then that's what you would have been interested in.
Well, like the whole rug that you've been exploring for the last 5 minutes, I've been looking at this and that part of it and whatever. That's what I'm saying. Like, so I could be looking at all different pieces
of
it.
But the chances are good that the premise of your question isn't right, because for the last 5 minutes, you haven't just been looking at the rug. You've really been going to the rug and then listening to me and going to the rug and looking at Jack and going to the rug and looking at somebody else and somebody else and somebody else into the rug and somebody else and somebody else. And if the beep comes during one of those somebody else's, then you wouldn't say I was interested in the rug. You would say I was paying attention to Ron's comment.
This is a general question. It doesn't have anything to do in particular with reporting your experience. If you go outside and you see a bird and they say, what did you see? You can mean, most people say a bird. They don't say a robin or a red robin, or they don't say an animal, or they don't say an object. So we have this natural way of talking about things. A basic, we tend to give a level which is informative but not too informative and not too vague. So we're going to do the same thing with our experience. I'm not going to say, I was just experiencing stuff. That would be, we say, okay, could you be a little more specific? And then we're not going to go into really fine detail and say, this many degrees and over to this side of my center line of my body, I experienced a red patch. I mean, we'd say, okay, just a little less detail, please. So I think it'll be like Russ says, it'll probably be just natural. We have these ways of talking about our experience that it'll just be natural to say, I was focusing on, was looking at that red flower over there, or one of the red flowers. So we don't care particularly which one, right? So it sounds like it's a theoretical problem that really we solve by conventions and practices. And not just about experience, about everything. We have this way of answering these kinds of questions naturally.
And I would say one last thing about that, and that is that I don't intend us to get to a perfect or pure or whatever anything, because that's beyond my reach, I believe. But I can get us pretty darn close to it, so it could be that you're going to be on the cusp between the whole thing of the red and the little thing of the red, and you're not going to be able to decide between those. And that's just the way it is. There's some limitations to this technique. But that you were with the little piece of the red or the big piece of the red, by comparison to thinking about the situation in Rwanda, well, I think you're probably pretty closer to here than you were over there. And furthermore, you might have been giving the impression falsely that you were listening to what I had to say, because you've been trained in this kind of situation to pretend to pay attention when actually you're more interested in the rug. And that is probably more close to what your attention was about as well. So I think we can get pretty close to what your attention, what your consciousness is aimed at, what your subjectivity was aimed at, what your lived experience was aimed at, even if we fall short of perfection in that regard. But what I would really like to do is to short-circuit the analytical conversation if we can, because I think this group has a tendency to fall into the analytical grooves and get to the experiential thing. And so let me lay out what the end of this experiment might look like. So if we deliver the beep comes, y'all who are willing, pay attention to what your experience is like, jot down some notes about it in whatever device you have with you to jot down some notes about it. And then, while I'm talking, I'll break off while you do that, give you time to do that. And then I will select at random through my computer one of you, and then we'll talk about your experience. Will you select at random? So I'm not going to pick on you because I like you or because I don't like you or whatever, because you're volunteering or whatever. We'll choose one of you at random. If you would like to decline to participate in that because that beep happened to be personal or for whatever reason you don't want to talk about it, then you say, I don't wish to participate. That's totally okay with me. And we shouldn't hold that against you. There's lots of reasons why people would not want to choose to not talk about a particular sample. So that's my plan for the immediate future.
If there's somebody that doesn't want to participate, you choose somebody
else. We'll choose somebody else. That's correct.
And if the beep goes off while Steve is talking, Steve will stop.
Steve's instruction is to write up immediately, give us a chance to break something out, and then Steve and I are yet to negotiate about whether we're going to conduct the interview right then or whether we'll conduct the interview at the end.
If it's okay, for people to be able to write down their description and then to defer feeding back on it until after my session ends.
Which is totally okay with me, which is the way I actually work most of the time. I give people beepers, I don't generally follow people around and talk about the beepers right then.
That's how I prefer it.
And that's totally fine.
But there's also a section where I probably want to play some stuff, and during that I prefer it to be beep-free, which again we discussed.
But other people who will be in Steve's position have said they would prefer to have the beep discussion right at the immediately after the beep, and that's totally okay with me. Either way, or neither, or somebody's got some better way to do it.
If I could say something, I want to be careful because I know you go to great lengths not to prejudice people's experience. But one thing that does seem to me to be important, and I don't know that people would automatically think of this, is the beep might go off and I guess one might say, well, I just wasn't having any experience. I was asleep. Or you might say, well, I was having this experience. Or there might be a range of things going on at the same time. It just seems like it seems important to point out that there's a wide range of possible things that might be going on.
I absolutely agree with that. There might be nothing, there might be one thing, there might be five things, there might be 50 things. And all of that, all of those options are okay with me. And you might be hearing something, seeing something, talking to yourself, having a feeling, having a sensation, daydreaming about castles in Spain, I don't know. Whatever it is that you have brought before the footlights of your own consciousness, 1, 0, 10 things.
To get into the phenomenology a little bit more, I suppose there are some ways of doing this. I don't do this a lot, so there's some ways of doing this less accurately than others. One way that might lead to errors or might not would be to say, oh, well, what was I feeling right before the beep? What was my state, the subjective state? And would be to investigate my subjective state now and just assume, well, there are probably some similarities. So right now I can go through and say, okay, I feel like an itchiness in my chest, like a cough that's going to come on in a few minutes, and I can feel this part of my leg against my other leg. But that might mislead me because this might not have been parts of my experience right before the beep, even though now when I probe my experience, I come up with those as answers, and it's right.
That's exactly right. So I don't want you to use the beep to trigger a cataloging of all the possible things that you might have been thinking, feeling, experiencing, whatever. What I want to find is the one of those things, the incipient cough, the itch, whatever,
that happened to have grabbed your attention at that last time.
Or the one or several.
Or none.
Or none.
Yeah. Which I think, I can see your point there, because it might be, if you're somebody who thinks that there's only experience, say, when you probe, then there isn't anything to report then until...
You'll always, unless you're absolutely in coma or unconscious, there'll always be some experience. So it might just be a room. Even if I'm having a blank, even if my mind is blank, there's always something in the field of experience, unless you're in deep brainless sleep or in coma or dead, or according to me. No, I've changed my mind about that.
After the lecture, what is lecture?
Did you say that as well?
No. We talked about it then.
So, at the risk of interrupting, do we want to play this game and see what happens? And,
yes. No, we decided not.
You need a number if you're willing to play the game. By taking the number, you're willing in the abstract to play the game. If the beep comes and you want to say, I don't want to play the game, that's okay. So this is the contract that says I'm semi willing to play the game.
Does it matter if I'm not always here?
Yeah, I can give you one. That's easiest.
These are numbers.
If I can give you a pen as to paper before, I can just give you an individual sheet.
Yes, sure.
Thank you.
And the reason for the numbers is that I will use my random number generator to generate numbers that look like this.
9, 5, 9, 10, 7.
So when the time comes, I will select one of you at random, and it won't be because I'm particularly interested in what you have to say or whatever. It will be because my computer will have selected you on the basis of... Nothing special.
You select at random. If you're particularly interested in somebody, what's the problem?
That's a good question. And as a general rule, I guess I have great faith in randomness. I have incredibly great faith in randomness.
Yes.
And it's an antidote to what I take to be a major mistake of modern science, which is to say, to think they know a little bit and then to go in the direction that they think they know. And I think it's much better to go in a lot of random directions and then make sense out of that after you know. So I would have no objection at all eventually, once one has honed one's skills, to go in a direction that you might have an a priori interest in. But I think it's very risky to go in that direction until you sort of randomly cover the waterfront. So,
if somebody really wants to be interviewed with you, why?
I would say that's probably okay. But in this situation, it may occur that as we have a discussion about a particularly random chosen deep, somebody else will say, "Well, I had an experience that was a lot different from that," or whatever, and that would be okay with me. What I would like to convey, let me back up a step. Well, first off, can I start the beeper here so I can continue to talk? And if the beep comes, then we will. I will break off whatever.
Yes.
So I'm going to start the beeper.
So just to repeat, if the beep comes, we just take a minute or two and try to...
While we're talking.
So if the beep comes, it's going to sound like that. You're going to pay attention to whatever was going on right at the moment of the beep and jot it down.
That's just a
trial. That's not it.
You don't mean to the experience right at the moment of the beep. You mean to the experience just before the moment of the beep.
That's correct. I mean the experience 1 microsecond before the moment of the beep.
So you have to remember.
You have to remember for 1 microsecond. That's right. So this is a retrospective study. All studies, I believe, are retrospective studies. This is as minimally retrospective as you can get, as far as I can see, because I don't have a corkscrew that goes directly in. If I had one, I would use it. And but I would only use it once.
So anybody ever give him a corkscrew?
So yes, this is a retrospective study, and that is one of the limitations of the study. The study is slightly retrospective. So you have to process, the fact of the matter is you have to process the beep, you have to recognize the beep, you have to remember, oh, this is the beep, I'm supposed to pay attention to what was just going on. All that stuff disturbs everything. But it disturbs it much less than any other method that I know of. That's the rationale behind
that. I still lots of, I wouldn't say I'm confused, but there's still lots of open questions. It seems to me you include both contents of thought and sort of qualitative fields.
If you're thinking about something at the moment of the beat, then we will be talking about what you were thinking about.
So
if you're feeling something at the moment of the beat, then we'll be talking about what you were feeling. If you're
the whole spectrum is open on this.
Whatever you happen to have coalesced into your experience. Right then, which may involve a thought, may not.
The problem is only that that very moment is also not monolith, and even if you have a content of thought, this can have associative element, this can have this vocal or I don't know, or visual aspect. There's so many layered, even that very tiny fraction of what you're looking, for.
I say, let's wait.
Many layered.
Let's wait and see.
Okay.
Because it could be that your experience will be many layered at the moment of the beep, and it could be that at the moment of the beep you will have chosen one of those layers to have made your figure at the moment, because that's the one that at the moment you happen to be interested in. The others are there in some implied or historical sense, but at the moment of the beep there's one of those that's more interesting than the other. And I don't wish to prejudge that. I'd say let's wait and see about that.
And if I could say one thing, because this group is so analytic, you know, I think maybe you haven't said some of the things I've heard you say in the past, and from my experience also. When you write something down, you don't necessarily have to try to do a complete description at that moment. It's meant to be more of a reminder, right?
That's
and
right.
The interview process later will bring out the whole range. So it may be that you just write down, thinking of Spain. And later on in the interview process, all sorts of associations come up and images and so on. But that's the range, the mechanism.
So there are two questions that have been raised that I would like to respond to. One is randomness and the other is iterativeness. And so I'm just saying that out loud so you can remind me when I forget. So the randomness part, it's still 30 years later, is unbelievable to me how much you find out about somebody when you have looked at 20 random samples from their experience. It is unbelievable. You just have to take my word for that if you haven't done it. By the time you have looked at 24 or 36 or something random instance of somebody's experience, you feel like you know something about that guy that you just didn't know any other way. And furthermore, they will tell you that you know more about them than anybody that they know, including their wives and their 5-year psychotherapist. And it is still very surprising because there's something that is just very direct about looking at a randomly selected moment. Because anything other than a randomly selected moment comes from the fact that we are socializing this mode. Oh, I'm not going to say that to him, or because he might think that, or I'm not going to look like this because she might think that. We mask that over. But what's happening behind the mask is what the beep has the potential to access. And you don't need too many of those before you find out something that's quite significant about the person. Do you find out everything about the person? Obviously not. Do you find out the most important thing about the person? Probably not. Do
Do you find out something very interesting about the person? Probably so. The longer you do it, the more you might find. So that's what I wanted to say about randomness, about iterativeness, and I'm remembering both of them, about this method that I'm describing here is what I have been calling an iterative method. And by iterative, I mean you've got to do it more than once. The kind of discussion that we have been having here is pretty similar to the kind of discussion that individual subjects have. Most subjects don't think they can do it for the same kind of thing, and they got the same kind of questions that you've got. There's more of you than there are people with one subject at a time, and you're more philosophically sophisticated than some subjects. But most subjects have the same similar kinds of questions. And most of the time when I'm talking to people, I'm answering their questions as best I can, but I know it doesn't matter. Because it just doesn't matter by comparison to experiences. So what happened, the method must go, and by must I mean it's an empirical fact over the 30 years of my doing it. You just have to do it once, and then we'll talk about it. And then in the process of talking about it, you'll get a quarter of your questions answered. And then we'll do it again and talk about it, and then you'll get another three quarters of your questions answered. And then we'll do it again, and by about the third time, you will have gotten all of your questions answered about your own experience. Because let's put it this way, I have not, given that including the fact that I have tried to do it for a long time, I have not figured out any way to transmit the concept of let's just simply pay attention to experience without just the doing of it. And I don't think that's a personal failing of mine. I think that's just the way it is. I think you have got to do it and then look and see what you did and then talk about it and then do it again and then look and then do it again and then do it again. Because what happens then is that each time you do it, you're better at it than you were the last time. So you've got these questions. You're not really sure you're going to be able to do it. Then you try to do it. Then you got a different set of questions. But the next time the beep happens, you're more skillful than you were the last time. And therefore, your questions are more targeted than they were the last time. And then we have another set of beeps to talk about those. And pretty soon, then you have developed the skill. So I think any study of inner experience has got to be an iterative method. And the corollary to that, well, I guess I kind of state what I think about that. I do think it doesn't just apply to DES. I think any study of inner experience has to be iterative. Which means I think you have to do it, and then you got to do it again, and then you got to do it again, and then you got to do it again. Which I think rules out all kinds of questionnaire studies and as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm.
Actually, one has a hand first.
Just really quickly, is there any?
Task in the writing is just to jot down enough notes so that if you're the lucky selectee, then you can jog your memory. You ready? Okay, so the rules of this game, if your number gets chosen and you say, yes, we can talk about it, your task is to answer as forthrightly as you can any of the questions that any of us ask. And if you don't wish to engage in that, you should be free to say, I don't want to talk about this beat. Fair enough. And it could be that there's some personal thing that happens as the result of this. Somebody might be thinking something that's personal. We should treat each other as adults, hopefully, about that. So here comes here's the line of selection.
10.
Number 10.
I know, baby. I was just drifting from thought to paying attention to Ron. So I was just moving away from, I've just sent an email to establish contact with my partner, and just thinking, you know, she won't be able to contact me back except through the email, and then just, you know, my eyes were just drifting up and waiting to see what wonderful things Ron was going to say, and that was that moment.
So is the wonderful things what Ron was going to say, is that something that was going on at the moment of the beep, or is that
my attention, it was just before the beep. My eyes were kind of coming up because he was about to say something. So I was drifting away from my thought to paying attention to his Muslim.
And was the thought still present with you, or had the
you're talking about the microsecond. You know, my mind was in that kind of blank space. You know, I was literally in the process of shifting attention.
Okay. And had so this beep happened at a transition moment for you.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay.
And so does that mean, by transition moment, you said it was a blank space. Do you mean that as literally, or do you mean that both?
Well, unfocused space. Yeah, it wasn't blank in the sense of nothing was happening, but it was blank in the sense of my attention was previously with one thing, and I was in the process of, right in the middle of transferring my attention to obviously the room was still here, but I had that sense of feeling of shift.
And when you have said you had a sense of feeling of shift, you have several times now indicated it like this.
It was literally my eyes were focused sort of down there, and I was literally my eyes were drifting up to Ron, and my attention was shifting as they were drifting.
Is it a fact of the universe that your eyes were drifting up to Ron, or were you somehow aware of the visual?
My memory was of actually shifting not just my attention, but my point of visual focus.
Okay. Anybody else want to ask any questions about
it? Just a little remark. I wonder how you can draw from that any personal conclusion, because I had exactly the same experience.
I also wanted to confirm. I had the expectation.
You also were going to get an email to.
I was thinking. Not a mail, not a mail.
It's my father.
I was thinking of my wife, of sending her a postcard. Oh, that's the name, my attention shifted to God. It was really amazing.
Well, let's come back to that in just a minute. Do we have any more questions about this particular experience?
Yeah. Did you not hear anything in the room?
Yes, that's true. It was the fact that I could hear Ron's voice, which was cueing me that he was about to speak, so that I hadn't yet got to the point of
getting what he was saying.
Yeah, because I was in between the process of hearing the sound and the meaning becoming evident and shifting attention at the same point.
So you mentioned, and Russ asked you about this, but you mentioned that your eyes were physically actually moving.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had to recall, obviously, but I definitely had that. That was my recollection, that I was kind of focused down there and then, kind of lazily come up.
So was your awareness of that more the visual field was changing, so the rug was kind of moving?
No,
or was
no,
it
no,
more
no,
the
no.
muscles of the eyes, or less specific?
Well, it wasn't the... It was a defocused moment of vision as well. The rug wasn't moving, my eyes were moving. That was my feeling. That it was kind of a lazy, but you know, it's a little bit. I was over there, and then that drew my attention over there, and I just lazily the eyes came up, if you like. But you know, in time to catch whatever it was.
So what is it when you say lazy? Was there a physical, like, kind of when you're lazily swimming?
Well, I was in a very relaxed state. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by that. So I was kind of, not particularly concerned about what I was thinking about before, but just thinking
around.
So quite a peaceful shift of attention, if you like.
So now let's talk about the similarities. This beep did in fact come at a transition moment in the real world. There was a transition going on, and so we had at least three transition moments. Anybody else want to say they were in transition? So the three of us were somehow feeling our experience was in transition.
Just maybe to add a detail to this, I was just in the sort of engaging in the expectation in what was going to come. And even I probably looked at him, I was not aware, the visual was not primary. Maybe this is for more trivial reasons, because I have to be more attentive, because English is not my native language, and so on. Anyhow, that was sort of a moment of expectation, you know. It was something forward, something anticipating, though it was actual, but I was aware of this sort of anticipation and expectation of what's going to come.
And is that expectation a bodily thing, a mental thing? You don't like?
This is a good question.
Or maybe it's an ill-advised question, but it...
No, it is this, yeah, this feeling of opening the space that is still not empty, but this potential that they're trying to guess what is going to come, and in what way will this potential be, the potentiality will be fulfilled. It is, I think, also some bodily element.
Okay. And then there was the voice that you asked about the voice. Was that because you were paying attention to the voice?
I heard quite a lot said. And you didn't mention hearing anything said. That was interesting.
And so that's two different things from my point of view, and I'm interested in which word you're saying. Are you interested in the qualities of the voice, or in what the voice was saying?
What it was saying.
Anybody else interested in that?
Yeah. I mean, there was this, there was this kind of coitus interruptus, you know, because Ron was just about to, he said, in fact, is there any? And, you know, we were right on, you know, waiting for him to finish his question. And he didn't. And, you know, so it was a real.
That was after the beat.
I know. Sorry. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that, I was focused on the words.
So it's just coitus.
So
you all were paying attention to the meaning of what he was saying, right?
I mean, there was a conversation going on, and Susan said something first and then passes it over to Ron. So.
But that was a long time before. Right?
I know, but that was, for me, that was the context, you know, going on there, so something being said here, you know, following the conversation.
That didn't feel a long time before for me.
Well, it was more than a part of my experience of having been offered this chance to speak by someone else and have been self-conscious about that and wondering, did I accept it too quickly? That was all going on emotionally while I was speaking.
At the moment,
maybe even explain why I was had to pause for a second to think of my next word.
So at the moment of the beep, you were feeling that?
Yeah, among other things, yeah.
And I was actually thinking that was jolly generous of me.
So was I, actually.
And I was actually feeling an emotional reaction also, because I had been, there had been this irritation because, you know, Russ had suggested a number of times. He said, well, let's just do the practice, you know. And so here was another, you know, yet another comment coming up. and then Ron said, you started off by saying just very quickly.
Yeah.
And I was relieved.
Yeah.
And that was what I was actually experiencing, was the relief.
So you would have been really disappointed if it had come back and I was going to ask him that.
If it had been, well, that reminds me of several different points I've been wanting to make. I would have felt terrible. But that's not the issue.
And I was interested in what he was saying, but also in the sound of his voice. So when you said the sound of his voice, I'm thinking, well, there's a little nasality and a little Europeanness or Britishness to my ear that I was paying attention to. So the sound qualities as well as sort of the expectation. So the time that's been allotted to me is coming to a close here, but what I would like to observe from this is that I don't hear anybody saying, well, I couldn't do that task at all. I didn't know what was happening to me. Yeah. Everybody's saying, well, I'm pretty sure what was happening to me. It was just like him or not. And that is sort of the heart of the method, it seems to me, that most people have some idea. And then maybe there's some question about, well, this as random luck would have it, this was a difficult beat because transitions are more complicated than a steady state kind of thing. But we dealt with that pretty much. Most of us weren't even in the transition game. We were still into our own. We were into our own thing. And I think that's the way people are. People are doing their own thing and then doing their own thing again and then doing their own thing again and then doing their own thing and then doing their own thing. And the beat catches one of those doing our own things, which are really quite disparate. We're all tied to something here, but tied in our own individualistic generosity or anger or expectation or timbre or whatever, different ways. But we're making that for ourselves. We are doing it for ourselves. And coming back to the notion of inner experience, almost everybody, or a lot of, some people were reporting what was clearly inner experience, like being angry or generous or whatever. That's clearly on the inner side. But other people were talking about what Ron had said, the meaning coming from him, which you could say is outer experience or whatever. So we seem to have been able to transcend that quite easily as soon as we are looking concretely at a beep. We can debate it sort of endlessly at the analytic level, but it's not that much of a problem. One beep at a time, even though this is the first beep. This is the first beep, but I generally throw out the first day's beep because I think people need practice for it.
It's like wine making, isn't it?
Just in terms of timing, I think you have more time, actually. But basically, there's only two things scheduled, right?
I have more time, but I would like to break my time up because what I think is going to happen is that we're going to give Steve a chance to talk, and if he's willing, he's going to get beat the time, or maybe even more than one time. We can debate that, and then we need time at the end to talk about that.
Okay.
So yeah. I'm trying to be careful of time so that he's got time, and yet we have time to talk at the end.
Okay.
I just, one thing, I mean, I guess I'd like to structure my session with, you know, doing a sort of fairly standard style presentation and then doing some of these media-based things and then having a discussion. And it may well be punctuated with questions, you know, and comments and reactions during my presentation. So,
and can I remember what you just said?
Yeah.
Before you say what you're about to say?
How do you know?
It's all right.
What I think we should do is take a brief break so that we get refreshed for him and let him and me, he and I, decide when we're going to do that. So I think you were going to say, let's not tell them when we're going to do that. If we decide, it could be that we'll just pick a time at random, or it could be that you will say, let's pick a time either in this part or that part or that other part. But they don't need to know that.
The only problem is I want to nail set up.
The break will be 15 minutes.
Before break, can I just finish my question? Is that possible?
It started with the words, is there any historical
evidence that something like Jack's interested in happens, that is, the iterative nature it changes people's experience over time, so they don't just have the same experience they would have had if you hadn't asked them to engage us, but they actually start experiencing things differently than they did before. Or is there no evidence of that?
I have seen bona fide miracles happen as a result of what appears to be as the result of pain and injury. And I've seen a lot of people they were the same at the end as they were at the beginning. So I think many people are changed, some with truly miraculous.
Will you be taking any time to tell people about those? Because when I heard you the first time, I thought they were very, very interesting cases that you, and that's what you mentioned last year, or talked about last year at the Oxford.
Well, I would be delighted to do that, but can we do that later?
Oh yes, I don't mean now.
So,
but will you be taking some time during the week? That's what I mean, to talk about those.
That depends on whether you want to hear them. I'm happy to talk about them whenever anybody wants to hear them, except that I would rather have us talk about some beeps first.
Oh, yes.
And then if people are interested, we can do it at a time.
Would be great to have all these discussions and you tell it, but after we do some of this experiential work.
Bye.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and I'll negotiate with Steve what we're going to do, and then 15 minutes.
15 minutes at 10:40. Yes.